Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter, and this is another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by my friends at GPA. GPA, as you well know, has been breaking new ground for over 70 years. They have cornered the market on reinvention. They have tremendous substrates for all printing and graphic arts, and they have really been able to build customized support programs like none other. So to learn more about everything that they're doing and innovating, visit askgpa.com. Guys, my conversation today is, I'm not going to lie to you, it's probably one of the best ones I've had, and I've had a lot of good ones. My conversation is with a gentleman by the name of Bo Bodie. He is the president and CEO of Brand Extract out of Houston, Texas. And he has an entrepreneurial spirit that is infectious. He's got a great deal of expertise in branding, but more importantly, he's got great perspective on where we are collectively and kind of cutting through all the noise of technology and what's gone on. They certainly do a lot of great stuff at Brand Extract around strategic branding. They've got technology that allows them to do market research, client research, and they certainly do some work in terms of messaging and creating the perceptions for clients. But I am really, really excited to bring you this conversation because he's just got a perspective on not only where we are with regards to branding, but maybe business in general. One of the things that strikes me about this conversation is that he says that the mess of figuring it out is being replaced by technology. And as you give this a listen, you'll understand that maybe the magic kind of lies in that mess. And that's something that we've been preaching for quite a while. So I can't wait for you to hear this conversation. So without further ado, my conversation with Bo Bodie. Hey, Bo, it's Mark Potter.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. I'm sorry about that. I thought that I was sitting here. I'm not sure how that... It must have gone into a some dark place. I'm not sure. It was. It didn't even ring. But I appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, no problem. Sorry, it's been so hard to get together. I'm not sure where your emails are ending up in my spam or what. But I'm sorry. Monday, you know, was weird. And then today, I was like, wait a minute. I thought we were supposed to meet, and there's nothing on my calendar.
Oh, that's weird. Do you use the iCal?
No, we use Google Mail or Google. Yeah, we use all the Gmail stuff. But
oh, maybe that's it. You know, sometimes technology is you know, it's just too much. You know, I mean, it's hard. And sometimes I send out. I have like several emails, and one doesn't collect the calendar events and. People say, hey, you didn't accept it. And I don't know, whatever happened to writing stuff down with pen and paper, you know?
Well, I'm finding myself, even driving home, I'm finding myself hitting Google Maps. I'm like, wait a minute, I know how to get home.
I know.
What is the problem here? I'm kind of starting to challenge myself with that.
It's crazy. Well, remember, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. It really wasn't. I mean, you used to have to print out directions. And if you think about that, I mean, it wasn't even long before that where, you know, you actually have to maybe stop and ask somebody for directions. I saw somebody actually ask for directions with an older couple a few weeks back. And I thought to myself, you just never see that. And on some level, it's symptomatic of where we're at, you know, I mean, we don't have that personal engagement anymore, but,
right.
Pretty wild. Yeah, we become addicted or dependent on technology, and I don't know, that's got to impact brands.
It impacts a lot.
Yeah.
It definitely does.
I
The way
know.
people interact with each other, the intelligence, the personalization, I mean, all that stuff is, it's way out of control. And it has an impact.
I don't know if it, I mean, you can stop it. You know, there's no reversing it, and I guess maybe you hope that there's some sort of backlash, that there's some sort of recognition that we've got to engage on a more personal level because it's a little bit more human. And I don't know. I at least I hope that. I worry, you know. I worry a lot about my especially my kids, you know. I see
Right.
they're just so they dive into technology like it's you know they like it's air, like it's water, you know.
Right.
They wake up and they grab their devices, and no, don't get me wrong, we're all doing it, but they've got I worry that they've never had any of those experiences.
It's going to be, I've got four kids that span two generations. So I've got a 21-year-old and an 8-year-old and then two in the middle.
Oh, wow.
And it's really interesting from where I sit, from a branding and marketing standpoint, watching just basically human behavior, consumer behavior, the way people interact with each other, in the business sense, right? And then looking at it from a personal standpoint, how my children interact with each other and with us, and what we choose to emphasize or focus on, as opposed to other families and other traditions that other people have and the way they use technology. I mean, it's really, and it frightens me a little bit from a marketing standpoint, because now a lot of the customers that we're working with are interested in personalization of a site, right? So if you go to a website, it knows generally where you're coming from and what demographic you might be, and so it feeds up a site that's personal to you. Well, that starts to get kind of frightening. If a brand, if a brand or a person or a whatever can, kind of feed to you what makes you happy, and are they really going to be true to who they are? Are you really going to get what you need from them, whether it's a just general human interaction, or is everybody just going to morph 1,000 different ways for everybody? I mean, the political realm, last year or a couple of years ago, Hillary Clinton's campaign, mastered it, and her logo, her identity, it was basically you could put anything in the graphic. I mean, you could put, whatever audience that you were targeting, they would see the Facebook message that worked for them. They would see the, based on their demographic, the kind of things they post, and then they would see a logo that was modified. It was the same shape, but it had something else in it. Whether, it was something that was more environmental, you'd have environmental images, women's rights, you have women's rights in it. If it was, Heartland, it'd have wheat in it. I mean, there were all those different kind of things. Well, then how do you really define, how does a brand define itself when it's defined by the user? I don't know. It's a really interesting time.
Yeah, it is. I wonder if the other side of that is, and do you, I mean, you have to deal with this a lot because I think about, you know, let's say you're building some of this stuff and you're building some of this personalization, and they say, look, we want to know them deeper and deeper, and we want to, you know, if they you know, if they make a move, if they do some sort of action, we want to be right there to react.
Yeah, right.
And that I get a sense that it's driven by the economics of it all. You know, you've got somebody in the corner office of these big brands that say, look, you know, I need the ROI, I need the number. And I wonder if on some level I don't know, we're not being as sincere, even though we're deeper and we're watching every move, but
Right.
it's a little, I don't know, like, I mean, can be a little creepy. But on the flip side, you got people, you know, who, you know, when you build this, you're like, yeah, this is what they want. This is what the client wants. I got to build it for them. And, you know, I have a business to run. And then it kind of, it feeds on itself. Do you sense that at all?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely, there's so much in this conversation, but it's definitely becoming. I think you'll have a backlash eventually, because you're right. When you say about feed, it feeds on itself. There's a point where you get so specific that to so many different audiences that the consumer or the person interacting with you or the customer interacting with the brand gets confused. You know, if I were a betting man, I would say that's really what happened with Hillary Clinton's campaign, right? I mean, she defined herself across so many different issues to so many different groups of people. And there's always that one thing that a brand has, right? There's always, not right. There's always that one thing that a brand should stand for. And then there are other pieces to it, adjectives that go around it, but the brand is consistent. And when the brand starts to stand for too many things, a consumer or a person doesn't know where to put them. It's like somebody that comes and they're asking for a job with me, and I have a position open, and it's specific, right? It's a designer or a brand strategist or whatever. And they come in and they say, well, I want the brand strategist position, but I'm also a designer, and I can also do production, and I can also do product management. And there's a point where you go, I don't know where to put this person. I may think that they're good at it, but are they going to get bored with just doing this one thing and all that kind of stuff? And I think that's a lot of what's happening today, in marketing, especially. I was just talking to a woman today, and we were talking about, and I think we're through this, but do you remember, you know, the Old Spice and Puppy Monkey Baby, Mountain Dew commercial, and all that stuff? There was a period where like all this stuff was colliding, and I think advertisers and marketers didn't know what to do, so they just went to shock. They just went to the weirdest thing that they could think of. And now I think you're having a move back. You know, it's like the Geico commercials and that kind of stuff. Now you're having a move back to like the Allstate commercials or the State Farm commercials, and We Are Farmers, where it's, you know, we've solved this problem before, so you should work with us. I mean, that's a pretty traditional marketing message. They weren't like that 5 years ago, you know. I just think people are starting to adapt now to the technology, and these kids that grow up with it, you know, they'll build relationships differently than we will, than that we did. And I don't know if that's a good thing. To your point, right? I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I will say it makes it really difficult to market to them.
Yeah, I mean it really does, and I wonder, like, so my son, for example, he's and I think he's probably on the lower end of this, but I mean he's playing this game called Fortnite. I'm sure you've heard of it.
My son is too.
And they are and there are some kids who are just downright addicted to it. I mean, heck, there are professional athletes that are addicted to it. I mean, they're playing like crazy. And but I do, there's a part of me that thinks, you know, he puts his headset on and he's talking, and he is got a little bit of the gift of gab, and you know, I can hear him, you know, dishing it out. And he's got, now there's a connection with, he's got a connection with some of the guys he knows, and he actually will see it. And there is that, hey, you know, we've moved away. So we were down in North Carolina, we've moved, and he's still playing that game with some people. So there
With
are
his
some,
friends.
yeah, there's some benefit there, but I do think you're right, is that it I worry about their I don't know, their perseverance. I don't know what the word is. I mean, because it's, you know, when they're so protected, they're so guarded, because we've got all this technology that keeps the world at an arm's length, whether they want it or not. Sometimes it's hard for them to find friends, and they feel maybe even more awkward. And then when they have to step out into the real world, they may not, wait a minute, you know, I'm not so special. And so you've got some of that going. And then what you said is, it's funny, because I've interviewed a bunch of people too, and I have the exact same issue. Like, you know, I want to say, well, this is the role. It's pretty specific. This is what I want you to do. And you start to find yourself as the employer, wondering how you're going to cater to them. And you know, the script has been flipped over the course of time. You know, you're just looking, back in the day, it was like, hey, I'm looking for an opportunity, I'll run through a wall for you. And you know,
Now it's what are you going to do for me?
yeah. And it's, and that's still part of the buying. I mean, people are dating. I mean, they don't even meet each other. We used to meet in bars, and you know, you had to kiss a lot of frogs, so to speak, and get rejected and all that kind of stuff. And now it's, hey, I found my perfect mate, and you know, I haven't even talked to him yet.
Yeah, the algorithm told me that this person's perfect, and quite frankly, maybe they are. You know, I mean, I don't, you know, the mess of figuring it out is being replaced by technology, right? And so if somebody is, do I worry about my son, from a failure standpoint? Well, no, he's done great in some things and he's screwed up other things. So he's just failed in different ways than I did. He doesn't scrape his knee as much as I used to. He doesn't get poison ivy as much as I did. He doesn't, those things don't happen because he's playing with his friends on Fortnite. Now, do I as a parent then need to balance that out and make him get outside and do things? Absolutely. It's healthier. But the reality is he goes, where I would go out to eat with my friends and we would go then hang out somewhere else to talk and do whatever or chase girls or whatever we were trying to do at that point in time in our lives. He goes out to eat with his friends, so there's some social, but 45 minutes later he's on Fortnite with all his friends. As opposed to, I mean, that's a weird thing that I've noticed is like, I'm going out with, my buddy Sam. He goes out, they go have dinner, and 45 minutes later, he's sitting back in front of the TV. I'm like, "What are you doing, bud?" And he's like, "Oh, Sam and I wanted to go play Fortnite, so we're gonna do this." And then there's three other friends that couldn't go to dinner are now on there with him, or two other friends that he hadn't talked to in forever. And so there's a benefit, there's a benefit plus the parent part of me. There's the other side of, I don't have to worry about him being out till 11 o'clock because he'd rather sit there and play Fortnite till 11. I don't know. It's a double-edged sword. And so,
Well, it's kind
how do
of,
we push them?
I was gonna say it's a little bit like cross-channel marketing. I mean, I have no problem with it if it's an extension of real relationships, and so that's exactly what your son's going through, and that's a good analogy, I think, for brands in general. And sometimes we get so defined by the channel. And I wonder if, that to me, like, so my kids play hockey, and so that's a big deal for them to engage, physically, socially, the whole thing. But yeah, you're right. They go back and or he goes back and starts playing Fortnite with these guys, and that's okay because it's an extension. When we were kids, you sat on the
Yeah, we did
phone.
different things, right?
Yeah, I mean, you played all day long in the summer, and then they told you to get off the phone. Remember that? I mean, I'd be sitting, and if you were talking to a girl, you weren't even saying anything. I mean, you're just sitting there for an hour, and so there are little similarities, but I there we collectively have to be cognizant of, hey, go out and see the world. Go skin your knee. And I think that's a great analogy. I love what you just said. The mess of figuring it out is being replaced by technology because, gosh, I think there's magic in that mess.
Well, there is, and I think that's what's happening. I think the expectation is, and I don't like to stereotype generations. I mean, everybody's got their thing. People are still people, but one of the challenges are we are not failing as much as failure has become a bad thing. And while failure wasn't wonderful, failure, to your point, you could unpack a lot of stuff out of that and learn a ton. And now we've reduced it to where the computer does a lot of the thinking and takes away a lot of the risk. And then all of a sudden, I get in a job, right? And no matter how hard your parents have worked or your friends or whatever to push you and get you out there's still so many things that are done for you by the computer, or done for you by the phone, or done for you by the robot or Alexa or whatever. There's the idea of, man, I can break this and then break this and break this and break this, and then all of a sudden it's going to be okay. People get into jobs and they've never failed before. They've never had a mistake. And so then when they have a challenge with a client, or they're the marketing director and one of their campaigns doesn't work or something, there's a, it's almost like, fall on a sword kind of stuff, as opposed to, well, that didn't work, let's move on and try something else. The computer told me it was going to work. Well, it doesn't always work that way. So that mess, slogging through the mess of that, it's incredibly valuable. So how do you get people, how do you put people in positions to fail that don't risk them so much. And I think, you know, my younger kids will handle failure a lot different than my oldest does. You know, my second, I think we did better with him. You know, but these last two, they'll just grow up with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be like, you know, they'll be like we will. You know, they won't. You know, they won't have to, they'll never have to talk on a party line like our parents did. You know, they'll never have to use a rotary phone, but they'll have other types of failures. They'll have other kinds of mistakes. They'll just be different than the ones we experienced. And, you know, that's at least my hope, you know, and then it's our job as parents or leaders of organizations to put people in positions that are uncomfortable, you know, maybe not setting someone up for failure, but where they have to fight through things. We have to be really conscious of that because a lot of these kids that are currently coming out of school just they haven't failed with the volume that you or I did because
mm-hmm.
they're not given the chance to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny, you know, as I think about all this technology and I think, you know, there's a part of me, if I'm truly honest that because, you know, as I get older, I grew up in the printing and graphic arts industry, you know, so
yep.
print on paper and even our
yep.
whole industry has a level of fear around technology, even to this day, that they don't know enough about it. And so you extrapolate that out to marketing technologies and that kind of thing. And people, you start mm-hmm. to think, you know, I can't keep up. There was a point there where you just said, I just don't know. I can't keep up with the latest drip campaign and all this stuff. In fact, at the beginning of this conversation, you were talking about it and you're kind of going, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that has to be, you know, that the greatest marketers on earth are using right now. But there's another part of me that's going, well, there's enough of us that are just kind of sitting back and we were afraid of it that we never really kind of got into it, that now there's this backlash that, you know, maybe people still do like engaging and talking
personally or reading something and touching it. Right?
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, there is a little bit of that. I mean, I think you got to find the you know, best of both worlds, but do you sense any of that?
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, I've watched my portfolio was hand painted when I came out of school.
Oh, wow.
You know, because my professors didn't embrace the computer, you know, although most of the kids I was competing with had technical skills, right? It was just right as all this technology was impacting and disrupting, mm-hmm. you know, the graphic design, printing kind of business. So we've got, you and I have a worldview that's a lot different than someone that's just jumping into it now, right? And you can get stuck in you can get really stuck in, well, you know, I used to look through this in a loop. Well, you know, all that stuff is automated now. It all lines up. You know, we have Word. You know, the opposite happens, right? You know, autocorrect is killing writing. You know, we still have, there's different kinds of problems.
Yeah.
And I think that the challenge is, one, is there a point in your life now that you can just say, I'm not going to learn Instagram?
Right.
You know, or I'm not going to participate in that, because what ends up happening is the technology now changes so quickly
mm-hmm.
that the next new thing comes out, and the next new thing comes out. And all of a sudden, instead of being like for 10 years, one rev behind,
mm-hmm.
you're like five revs behind in 2 years.
Right.
You know, you're five different types of technologies. I'm going to use the wrong word, stupider, faster. You know, it doesn't. There's this thing that's happening that business owners have to deal with that they didn't have to deal with before, you know. And so 10 years ago, I don't know the phenomenon of GDPR, right? You know, if that whole thing about, you know, privacy.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, if that had come out, it would have taken the lawyers 2 years to catch up to it, and it would have taken the governments 4 years to catch up to it, and it would have taken marketers. It would have been an awesome opportunity for marketers, for, you know, people that build websites, say,
mm-hmm.
you know, or people that do all this data security. It would have been a great opportunity to them. You could build a business around that for 5 or 10 years.
Right.
Now, I click a button and it's all fixed. I mean, I'm overreacting, but like the attorneys are on it right away, whatever. And then all of a sudden, it 6 months later, it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, and so these opportunities come up, and you have to address them so quickly, and it goes to litigation so fast, and it happens so. I mean, it's mind blowing, you know, for a business owner. And then you think about marketing and the tools and the confusion that happens with these people about, well, you know, we need to have a great presence on LinkedIn. Like, yeah, sure, but you've got 50 people looking at that.
Yeah.
Why? You know, but no, but we have to be there, and our brand's got to be here, and our brand's got to be there. It's just, it's too much. There's so much volume and so much change so quickly.
Yeah.
That it makes it really hard to determine what, you know, it's all, the problem is it's all real, because it's all real for such a quick second. The fads, you know, fads go away so fast now. You know, Fortnite, you know, this Fortnite thing, man, I'm waiting for it to go away. It hasn't gone away, but in reality, they've only been playing this game now for 6 months, you know?
Yeah. They're on track to make $3.5 billion in a year.
Unbelievable. You know, and the reality is we played Pong for five.
Yeah. I know.
You know, I mean, before you know, the Atari came out with something that we could do differently. You know, that's the kind of thing that these games come out on top of each other. And the same thing happens now with technology. You know, we're, you know, being in Houston, the energy industry, you know, the new drill bit comes out tomorrow. You know, the new medical technology happens the next day.
Yeah.
You know, how do you keep up with that?
Well, I don't think, and so, you know, I'll put myself out there and be vulnerable, because I've talked about this and I've preached about this, maybe partly because I believe it. I mean, for the most part, I believe it, but then there's just probably a small part that is trying to rationalize my value on some level. And that is that, you know, the industrial age is over, and we are so conditioned that to define ourselves by product. And even the way we sell, even the way we market, I mean, it's all about the great. I mean, to this day, I mean, you know, 50 years ago, they just were putting Crest toothpaste in front of us, and it was kind of like, oh, well, hey, that you know, that's just kind of,
I should try Crest,
right? Yeah. And but today it's the same thing. It's the next thing. And so I, you know, there's a part of me that feels the good news of this is that you've got to be defined by who knows you, that the tools are going to change, but even when they change, they'll first turn to you because they know you, they've trusted you. There's something deeper there that maybe doesn't, you know, because it comes so fast, it says, hey, I know Bo, so I'm not jumping just because the tool has changed or whatever, because,
right,
you know, there's a part of me that hopes and believes in that. And then there's the other part that goes, says, well, it's got to be true. Otherwise I'm washed up.
Well, I think, that's an interesting way to look at it. I mean, when you start talking about, you know, shift from the industrial age to the whatever, you know, technical age to the information age to whatever is artificial intelligence age, whatever the next one is, you know, the timing is compressed, right? We were in the industrial age and we were in the iron age a lot longer, you know, than the industrial age. And we were in the information, you know, age much shorter than that, you know, and it's getting shorter. These ages, I guess, changing. But I think that confusion, to your point about relationships, you know, building, you know, I trust Bo, or I trust Mark, or I trust, you know, I trust my information from this source. You know, I think right now you've got a little bit of a backlash, right? And you've got a group of people that are now having to adjust. And then they say, okay, I'm a Fox person, or I'm a CNN person, or I'm a, what, you know, I'm going to trust this one thing, even though they have access to all kinds of amazing information. Right.
Right.
The challenge is going to be, as time goes by, how are you consistent to where I can understand, I can, you know, they're, you're a pillar, right? You know, if Brand Extract's main position is all about belief, and my competitor's position is all about purpose, and my other competitor's position is all about creativity, you know, I need to attract people that that fit me, as opposed to finding everybody that wants to buy branding or marketing services, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the big challenge. It's almost the consistency. I think Apple was so consistent under Steve Jobs for so long. Their products now, they're not quite as intuitive. They're not quite as well done. They're not as smart, you know, as they used to be. They're not as simple as they used to be. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, that's why that became an affinity brand for me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's eroding, but I pretty much know 90% of what I can trust from Apple. Mm-hmm. And so I'm willing to pay a premium for that product. And I'm not willing, the switching costs mentally, I guess, are too great for me to jump to a Samsung, right?
Right.
So I think in many cases, switching costs have gotten lower and lower and lower as things have commoditized. But the emotional switching costs are big because I've associated myself so much with this product and I have too many of them in my house. They're different, right? And it's a different kind of switch than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the big hurdle for people, is to not chase shiny objects for brands and to be consistent with who they are and not try and be everything to everyone.
Right.
You know, which is, you know, because I have all these tools that allow me to do it, you know, let that go, you know, let's stop that. That's going to be the big shift for us.
But you can be everything for a few or select, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And I think that's, you know, I believe in that. I mean, it's almost like when going back to that young person that you're interviewing who, you know, wants to do it all,
right?
You can say, sure, you know, and you'll have that opportunity. But understand this, we're doing it for the people that we define ourselves by, that know us. And when I say know us, they, because I, you know, I've always said it's not what you know, and it's actually not who you know, because, you know, if everybody you know thinks you're a jackass, then, you know, you're in trouble. But if it's who knows right. you, it's who trusts you. And so, which is, you know, it's your brand. It's what you, mm-hmm. what you stand for. And,
right.
I think,
well, that was the one thing. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's what you guys are all about, I would think.
Yeah. Well, that's the attempt, right? You know, you have to, in order to market someone appropriately or effectively, in order to position someone appropriately or effectively in the marketplace, and you have to understand who they are. I mean, one of the things when I, you know, so I started my career as a graphic designer, was starting to have really big conversations and wanted to run my own business. So I went and got my MBA. And there was this great class. It was my business law class, which was hilarious that a marketing guy would even be that interested in business law. But there's a point where it's like, wow, this finance class is awesome. What are you talking about? In the business law class, the professor started talking about, look, you know, the businesses have personalities, and those personalities can be sued for certain things. You know, the way that the business acts in the marketplace has a big impact on its exposure to litigation.
Mm-hmm.
And almost the personification of business, just like, you know, I would sue someone who treated me like garbage or hit me or did something, you know, it's the same thing. And so that personification, I mean, there are all these little pieces of the roadmap and this MBA program that have been valuable to me. But that was one that kind of came back to how we approach marketing, you know, how we approach branding, is that, you know, your business is personified and it has a value. It has values. You know, its mission and its corporate values, those are real things, you know, mm-hmm. and how do I then take those and personify the business in a way that it seems more valuable to the right audience for them? And that takes understanding what, you know, what can you really deliver? What can't you really deliver? How do you want to deliver it? You know, from a branding standpoint, how do we personify that?
Mm-hmm.
So that the client that you want to work with and that it wants to work with you understands that really easily.
Yeah.
And how do we simplify it to a point when this really complex world, they go, I want to work with this valve company because they care about me, or I want to work with this valve company because they, that valve is going to work best, or I want to work with this valve company because it's the cheapest,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's the most reliable. Yeah. You know, how do I bubble all that up to be to a point where it's really easy for someone going through the phone book in the of Google, right? to go, or working with 52 salespeople, because now they can access me so much easier than they used to be able to. Now, how do I make sure that message is so clear that I opt myself out or I opt myself in more quickly?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's tough, right? I mean, and it changes the model. You know, it's, mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. I talk to young people and sometimes, I'll ask them, you know, what's the image that comes to mind when you think of a salesperson? And a lot of times it's, you know, the first thing they think is, oh, you know, car salesman, used to car salesman. And I said, well, is that a positive right. image? And they said, well, no. And I'm thinking, well, they didn't grow up in the industrial age. This is, and so condition, it's permeates us. It's something. And, right. you know, we look at that and we think sales is such a negative thing, but everybody's in sales. And if we could get that mindset where, you know, just like finance, I mean, or the legal department, right? Like how we deal with this matters to the market. You know, if right. everybody embraces this idea that we're all in sales, then we're all trying to move people and deepen relationships with people. It's a big deal. So,
The best example of that, I think the best example of what we've been talking about is the issue with Starbucks in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It's easy to put that into the category of racism, right? And that, you know, is that what happened? Probably.
Right.
I wasn't there, but you can read all kinds of stuff about it.
Sure.
But the reality to that situation is, you know, Starbucks had built their brand originally, right? So people that are coming in there, you know, they built it as the third place, right? It's not home. It's not work. It's the third place. So it's just somewhere that I grew up. You know, if you grew up with Starbucks, it's the new McDonald's, right? And if you grew up with Starbucks, you know, it was a place that I could go sit and hang out
mm-hmm.
and not even buy anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, now there are certain different people look at that differently, right? If I'm going to, you know, the old man in me that grows up a certain way is like, well, if I'm going to patronize an establishment or use their whatever, I'm going to buy something. But there's a whole generation of kids that grew up with it being their living room.
Right.
So now you're building Starbucks that are thinner, less friendly. You know, they're really more drive-throughs than they are places.
Mm-hmm.
And so now your brand is mixed, right? There's a mix of places and there's a mix of drive-throughs. And then there's a training component to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not about social justice or whatever. Is my brand about getting them through the drive-through quicker, which means getting them out of my store faster and turnover,
mm-hmm.
or is my brand about being a third place, which is what Starbucks always was?
Right.
You know, it's not that anymore.
Right.
It is a drive-through. You know?
Yeah.
So that business changes, right? And so that manager that's making a decision about whether or not you can loiter in my store or not, there's a whole generation of people that grew up with that brand. To what we're talking about is the living room. So the
right.
brand there, what is the brand? You know, the issue isn't training. The issue is training. It's a symptom. Right? The complex problem is, you know, how do we treat our customers based on what we're trying to do? And if our job is to get them in and out quickly, you know, then there's a problem with someone sitting and not buying something in a chair for all day long.
Right. You know,
but that's not what we were sold, you know, for the first 20 years of Starbucks.
No, so, and that's the commodity. You know, you can commoditize anything, right? And that's what happens. I remember I had a long time ago. I mean, I was talking to somebody about this and talking about McDonald's and, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, you go through drive-thrus. I mean, think about that. I mean, today there are literally two lanes in a drive-thru, and there are,
right.
I mean, it was fast food. And then they said
they had faster food.
Yeah. It was, they had to call it. They literally just numbered it. It was so,
yep.
It was like, you know, you say, hey, I'd like to get a Big Mac, a Coke and a fry. And
yeah.
so, oh,
but
so
I want a number eight now.
Yeah.
Right?
Now it's a one. Right. And so our two, and you're going, boy, they're really, and the way they frame it up is, you know, they're really being market based because they're trying to deliver it faster, but that's, you know, it's absolutely not the truth. There's a fine line. There's somewhere along the line where it crosses over to, this is all about the quarterly call. This is all about the stock price. This is all about the number. And it's a tough thing. And you're right. All this technology, all this noise, all this day and age, we live in that. It's hard. And I do think that there's a level of sincerity that is needed.
Yeah.
And even these new generations, they kind of demand that. I mean, they can smell the BS a mile away, just like we can smell a cold call from a mile away, you know?
Right, right. Well, I think that's the, you know, when you think about these brands, you know, Walmart, you know, used to be always low prices, you know, now it's, I can't remember, everyday low, I can't remember what it is, but there was always lowest price, you know, was kind of their promise. And McDonald's, I mean, if you watch The Founder, I don't know if you've seen that movie with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, it was great.
Great movie, right? Yeah. But if you understand where, this is the branding guy in me, right? You know, I look at that as, you know, he shifted them from a fast food, right, which is new concept, but high quality fast food. Mm-hmm. They had the best fries and they had the best hamburgers.
Right.
And he shifted that company to a real estate play.
Right. Right.
But was still trying to hold on to the quality, right? Now when we look at McDonald's, it's just a place to get quick, cheaper food. I mean, it's not, I don't expect quality when I go in there.
Yeah.
I don't even expect a smile. You know, I just want to get it in and out. Right. Do I want them to be happier? Those are emotional things I got to deal with myself, but they have released the quality portion of their brand.
Right.
And they've rebranded themselves around efficiency, or not even efficiency. They've rebranded themselves about, you know, quick food. That's it. That's all they are.
Well, they're happier over at Chick-fil-A. All right.
They are. My pleasure, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't. But you know what? It's funny. I tell my kids, like, we won't eat at McDonald's, right? But when I was a kid, I mean,
that was different.
It was a big deal. I mean, it was a big deal. And my brother could lift down two Big Macs, and it was I remember. This is, you're right, the fries were fantastic. And they look at me like, you really? I mean, I joke with them. I even drive by an Arby's and I'll go, ooh, Arby's. And they go, really, Dad? And I said, well, it's been 100 years since I've been there. But
an Arby's roast beef sandwich 20 years ago? Man, oh my God. With the horsey sauce?
And, yeah.
Man, I mean, so good. And now it's basically a bite. And it tastes awful.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I won't go. I mean, compared to what we remember.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really is amazing. Tell me, because you're being gracious with your time here, but tell me about, give me the 411 on Brand Extract and give me a little bit about your history.
So Brand Extract, my business partner, Jonathan Fisher, and I founded it in 2013. He had his own firm. I had started my own business 2 years prior. So I've been out on my own, you know, for 15 years. But Brand Extract really started because, you know, as designers, we were seeing this kind of idea of belief, you know, the idea that people kind of really buy into something. It wasn't about just making something like a pretty graphic design, you know, kind of thing, but a beautiful logo that represented the company. And we were seeing the changes in marketing, you know, websites were becoming a bigger thing than, I'm dating myself here. But what people wanted to talk about is they'd come in and they'd say, well, we need a website, or we need a brochure, or we need an annual report. And we'd say, okay, to do what? And they would lay down on the couch and they would go, you know, my sales team's not working. And I'm not aligned. My corporate goals, not everybody's bought into our goals. We're not aligned. The sales team isn't aligned, or the market's shifting. And we were seeing these things. And it was like, how do we solve these problems, you know, with kind of traditional communication strategies and traditional, you know, kind of design, the traditional design problem was changing. We kind of saw that. So we went all in on branding, and we named it Brand Extract, which was kind of an interesting, it's still an interesting thing, right? Because nobody wants to buy business consulting from a branding agency.
Right.
But that's really what we've ended up doing. You know, we go in and we instead of designing and just designing logos or just designing communication strategies, we're really looking at helping people design their organization around who they are, and how that needs to be expressed in the market.
Yeah.
And so over the last, 13 years, we've developed brands across, mostly B2B, but some B2C, helping EVgo build a charging network and convincing people that they can buy an electric vehicle, or talking, transforming a Circle K franchise into, the Stripes convenience stores. It's more of a regional brand down here, but, that fast, friendly, and delicious is okay.
Right.
And I can get that from a convenience store, and helping Transocean, shift from, this really hard to work with giant behemoth of a company that does deep water drilling into, an organization that understands the value of what they do and for their customers and how to do it safely and reliably, but using technology to do it better. I mean, those are case studies across the different clients, but what we've ended up becoming, as an organization that builds belief. And what we mean by that is, we make things that people use, and typically they use them because they believe in them. And so you've got to align not just customers and not just strategies, but also your employees, to make all this work in concert. So you don't have to spend so much money on media and marketing. And I don't mean that, not that you don't need to do those things. It's just, how do you make all of these pieces of the business work in concert together, so that people experience the brand the same way every time?
Right.
And then back, and we talked about that earlier about, then I have an affinity for the brand, and I'm willing to let it slide when it makes mistakes, and I'm willing to invest in it more, and I'm willing to pay a slight premium, even though it may be a commodity, because I know that it's going to make my business better on the B2B side, or I have a perception that it will make my life better on the B2C side.
Right.
And those things, that line is getting grayer and grayer too. I mean, it used to be B2C was so much different than B2B, but we're finding, because things are moving so quickly, that on the B2B side, people have an affinity to a brand because it does help them drill a well faster or take care of a surgical, a surgical need quicker and safer, or, help me solve a legal problem more efficiently, or, we're starting to find that people are having an affinity toward their business. They've always had an affinity for business to business, but it was more about, did you cook me barbecue last week, than it is about, it makes our business run better. And so that, that's kind of a rundown of Brand Extract. We've got a strategy practice that defines that. We've got an agency practice that helps express the brand. And then we've got a technical practice and some software we've developed that helps across both data science all the way to, content management, the ability to manage a content. And so that's what we've built. It's an interesting company because it does a lot of things, but again, what we were talking about today, it's so messy. How do you tie all of those things together? And we're finding that our clients don't have the expertise to pull all that.
No, it's really interesting. It's awesome stuff. And thanks for sharing that. I think that, it's fascinating when I hear you talk about B2B and B2C, because you're right. B2B, in for a variety of reasons, has moved more towards B2C kind of activity, or the way they engage. And part of that is technology, right? But we don't like this, the sales model of yesteryear, knocking on our doors, walking the floors of, it used to be where you just walk into a building and have the run of the place. That can't happen anymore, just for security reasons, safety reasons. You can't call people and you can't email people. Heck, I mean, even texts today go unanswered. And so, all those technologies are there. So, but at the same time, those people are going through self-discovery, and that they do need to find, just like we were talking about, people finding their perfect mate online. They're going through finding people that way.
The perfect company, corporate relationship.
That's right. I mean, it's your perfect match, or maybe there's something there to play around with. But It's funny because I sometimes say to people, we all want to get up the funnel to where they're starting to think about those decisions as to why I should change, but they won't let us up at the top of the funnel. And so by the time they pull somebody in, they've already made the decision that they want to change. And in fact, a lot of times now they're just in a bake-off and you're pulled in. In the B2B world, like in B2C, you're buying for lifestyle, right? In B2B, it's livelihood. So maybe I already know, maybe I'm the B2B buyer. I already know what the hell I want. I'm going to buy whatever it is, but I'm pulling somebody in because I want somebody to blame if it goes wrong. And it, so, you know,
Nobody
it's,
ever got fired. Nobody ever got fired for hiring IBM, right?
that's right. That's
That
right.
old adage. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's been interesting to watch that change, and that's kind of how Brand Extract, the genesis of it. I'm a son of an entrepreneur. My dad had a carpet business here in town, in Houston, and I grew up kind of on his boardroom floor, and he made me clean toilets and change light bulbs, and then eventually sell carpet and install carpet and work in the warehouse. And so watching a business operate from here to there, and then watching the way people perceive, when I was on the sales floor, their perception of our business, and then getting into graphic design, and I've just always been really curious about consumer behavior. And then, then eventually, how do you model that, right? How do you understand it so much, and what's the financial impact of that behavior? And how do I, and now as things are commoditizing and working in B2B most of my life, how do I make that, how do I help somebody understand the true value of that product if it does actually offer a greater value? And then how do you help a business then capture that value? Because it's real easy back to, three bids and a buy. I just want to buy that and get it done. Well, the reality is, well, that company may not be able to deliver at the volume you need, or they may not be able to deliver at the quality level you need, or they may not be able to, they may be able to deliver one thing at the level, but they may not be able to deliver the five you need over the year. How do we communicate that story? And that's always been a curiosity for me. I mean, even with my kids, and I talk to them about, the value that they bring to the world, and what do you want to be known for, and how can you help? I mean, those are all things. It just kind of spans my, it's the way I think about the world, right? How do we, I guess it goes back to my little Italian mother always telling me, that Johnny, you don't want to be associated with that Johnny. He's trouble, and he's going to make you look bad someday, or he's going to pull you into something bad. All that stuff, all of those experiences go into making a good, marketer or brander, somebody that kind of understands the way associations work with the brand, understands the way the brand acts, how important that is, and then how it looks. Do you dress in a suit, or you dress in cut off jeans? I'm going to have a different perception of those people, good and bad, for both. How does a brand present itself? Maybe all this stuff came from my little Italian mom.
It always does.
Telling me, dress nice, clean up, wear good underwear if you get in a wreck,
That's right.
all those things, man.
Marketing 101 by the mothers that loved us,
That's right.
It's
That's
true.
right.
Well, I mean, this has been awesome. Let me ask you, I'm gonna do two things. So before I let you go, one, so advice, if you said, look, what my first piece of advice to any, predominantly the people that listen to this and read our stuff is B2B. What
Right.
would be your, what would you, say, well, if I had one piece of advice, it'd be X in this day and age when it comes to managing your brand, all that kind of stuff.
I think the one piece of advice that I would give anybody is simplify things down to one word. Who are you as an organization, and what value do you provide your customer? And understand that, and then build off of it. I think in many cases, especially because I think the B2B marketing, the complexity of B2B marketing and B2B branding and all that stuff is way more complex than the consumer side. I mean, it doesn't mean, like, the consumer side needs to be in multiple channels with a message that works for their target demographic, right? But in the B2B side of things, it's a lot more complex than that. Back to what you said, right? This is more a lifestyle decision rather than it's a livelihood decision, right? I mean, that's compl- I could get fired if I use the wrong drill bit, or I can get,
Right.
fired if I use the wrong lawyer.
Right.
If you can, the one thing, if you can simplify and understand what you deliver very clearly and make that really clear, starting with your mission to your values to then your the brand promise you make to the audience, that's going to get you so much further when it comes to the commoditization of things, because at least you're clear and you hammer it home every day, and I know what I can get. I may not choose you because I don't align with you, but at least those that will align with you can understand it.
Right. Right.
That'd be my one thing, is simplify.
That's awesome.
Simplify and clear and be consistent.
Well, listen, I mean, I'm going to come to Houston because I could talk to you for days. I think this is kindred spirits kind of deal. I honestly, I think this is I'm really glad
Come on. Yeah, I am too, man. This has been great. And
Yeah.
come on down, man. I'll show you the best barbecue Mexican food places in
Oh, that's
the
what I need. That's what I definitely need. Listen, last thing. What's the shameless plug time? How can they find you?
Just it's pretty easy, Bo at brandextract.com and online, brandextract.com.
Perfect.
Just how it sounds. That's it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Bo, man, I'll be in touch. I'm gonna definitely I get down there every once in a while and let's stay in touch because this has been great and I can't thank you enough for taking the time.
Sounds good, Mark. Thanks for entertaining me, man. This has been awesome.
All right, buddy. Take care.
All right. See you,
See ya.
man. Bye.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. I think you'll agree that Bo has the right perspective on things, and I think that his ideas around branding maybe have his practicality struck me. I like the fact that he didn't seem to take himself too seriously, that he's trying to juggle everything the same way, and that he knows at the core that you have to be defined by specific groups of people or community. And I just don't think that he uses that whole idea around community lightly. I think he believes in that. And in fact, his whole concept around his company is belief. So I know that I believe in what he was saying, and I hope you do as well. So I can't thank you all enough for taking a listen to this conversation. I certainly can't thank Bo enough for his time. I want to remind everybody that Brushstrokes is a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. We bring it to you every other week with some really stimulating guests. Today's podcast was brought to you by my friends at GPA. And if you want to learn more about all their innovative substrates, visit askgpa.com. My thanks goes out to them. My thanks goes once again to Bo and certainly to you. And as a reminder to all of you, be the buffalo. And until next time, take care.